Well, next in the interview circuit is Brian Tome, who's going to be talking to us about Mama Lodi.
Yes, I am. Oh, man. We've got about 300 people in here. Brett is one of them. 300 people who are going to be heading over to Mama Lodi on Wednesday. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a moment. But first, just a little update about this for many of you who are new or don't know what's going on with this. We did a thing called Crazy Campaign about 2 years ago. Many of us are still in the midst of fulfilling 3-year financial commitments above and beyond what we normally gave. And part of what that included was building a hospice in South Africa, which is the largest hospice of its type in the country. Our original budget was $250,000. And as a result of rising construction costs, we also put another floor on it, and also vandalism that we've had to deal with, and also dealing with the first few months of operating costs until businesses start up over there to fuel revenue. It's actually about $750,000 that we've actually written in checks so far for this effort. And we have a partnership with these folks, and we're excited about it. And 300 people in this place, it's about 5% of our total adult attendance. If you're going, about 6,000 adults will be here this weekend, not including kids. So about 5% of our folks are actually going over there to do things like building houses, about 27 houses, a few hundred gardens to feed people on an ongoing basis, working with children, serving in the AIDS hospice, and it is just a cool, cool deal, isn't it? Yes, it is. So we have a message from Titus, who is the pastor of our partner church over in South Africa. Let's take a look at that.
This is amazing. This is God's doing. This is a miracle. The hospice is built. The ground floor is 100% done. And we have opened to take in patients and the staff. And I wish to say thank you to Crossroads for contribution, for partnership. God has used you to make this a possibility to be able to help the people of Mamelodi and Pretoria. And we give God the praise. And also, we are so excited about the team that is coming, the 300 of you coming over here to make a huge difference. And this will not only affect the people of Mamelodi, but the whole country, because we want the whole country to know. We having the television, the media, the television. When you guys are here, it will be blown throughout the country. And so we are excited that you guys are coming, and so we cannot wait to have you come here. The countdown has started.
Yes, this is actually national news over there in an apartheid-torn country. To have 300 Americans, many of which are white, going to go over and just take up residence in this place is making ripples throughout the whole country, as Titus said. Actually, someone told me that I think in the history of Cincinnati, there's never been 300 people from the city that's gone out and done a mission trip like this. It's pretty stinking cool. And the people who are here who have done that have worked their noogies off, raised money, $3,500 or so ahead for supplies, airfare, all that kind of stuff. It's about $1 million worth of stuff that's happening, about 25,000 of which Crossroads ministry budget is scholarshiping. That's about $25,000 short, which wasn't bad given there was about $1 million that needed to be raised. Your husband is actually...
He is going with his A-team.
How'd the fundraising thing go with him? Did that work well?
It went great.
I mean, it was amazing. People wrote letters to people. They did fundraisers. Phenomenal stuff. So these folks are actually our ambassadors. This is our church going over. They represent us in doing our work. And therefore, if you're here, if you could stand, if you're going over to Mama Lodi on Wednesday, if you would stand here, please look at that. Man, yes. Stay standing. Please stay standing. This is just some of them. We are so thankful for your faithfulness, and we actually want to pray a prayer of empowerment on you. If your closest person you like to pray, just kind of reach out and touch them, if you would. Let's pray for them right now, okay? God, these people here have been faithful. For months and months, they've been doing this. They've been working. I know there's been times when they've been low because they haven't thought they could do it. I know there's incredible alterations in their life that they've made, and I know that they're still not sure exactly if everything's going to be here okay in their normal life for 10 days while they're away. And so I ask that you take care of all the stuff they're uncertain about. You would empower them. You give them your grace and your courage, and you put protection around them in the flight over, in the midst of their time over there. You'd help them to to love on people as only you can while they're there, and if they've left loved ones behind, that you would make up the difference with them being absent and giving them protection and meeting their needs. So thank you for these folks, and we're just honored to be in the same church with them. Amen. 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 All right, have a seat.
I just had this one word that kept ringing in my head over and over and over again, was that I have the right to this life that God, you know, thought of for me. And that's a really powerful word, especially, you know, in America where we talk about rights and we throw it around so loosely, but to hear that I have this right from my Creator to freely be who He made me to be just really hit me, because, you know, I've had different things happen in my life where I felt like I didn't have the right to be who I was made to be. But, you know, then Brian uses not one, but like a million scriptures to just reiterate that I totally have that right. And I'm bawling my eyes out like a baby, to be perfectly honest, and just walked away that day going, okay, I have no excuses. Like, I just sat there like everybody else, and I heard that I have the right to do this, and if I don't, then it's my own fault.
After this weekend, I kind of went home and reevaluated my relationship with Jesus and just how I was putting what I felt into action. I believe that that's a key part, that I feel called and I believe, but what am I doing to show it? What am I doing to really be there? And when I thought about it, I wasn't doing as much as I thought. And after this weekend, I truly went home and said, I'm going to refocus and I'm going to read more. I'm going to display what I believe more. I'm going to be who I believe God called me to be more often.
So many things have been revealed through the ID series and all this mess and these things that you see in your life. And it's just like, how do I deal with those things? How can I change and no longer listen to those lies? And then Brian talked about how our ID is that of Jesus, that when God sees us, He sees Jesus' righteousness. He sees Jesus in us. And so it kind of takes the pressure off that I have to prove myself to God now.
Honestly, it wasn't very fun to dredge up all the stuff that the ID series dredged up. I mean, it hasn't been fun, but it's been enlightening. It's helped me kind of sort some things out. And, you know, I've learned in my life that every time that there's a low or every time you go through some difficult times, that there's something better on the other side of that. And I haven't really hit that spot yet, but I know it's going to be there. And in the last few years, that good thing on the other side was getting into a better relationship with Jesus at the end. So the journey has always, for me, taken several steps backwards before I got to a better place.
I know I have a lot of work to do, and in refocusing and looking at what I have been doing, I know that I've grown a lot, but I know I have a long way to go. I think of the saying, thank God I'm not what I used to be, although I'm not what I want to be. I still have a lot of work to do, but the beauty is that I know that now. I'm aware that I have work to do and I have a direction of where I want to go.
Everybody, welcome Gary to our stage today for a few moments. And have you noticed, as I have looked at those folks, have you noticed the countenance of those folks changing over the last several weeks? I have. It's just they're sort of coming to life. And that's where we are in this church-wide journey that we're on right now. If you're newer here today, you know, we don't expect you to believe in anything we're talking about today. You go at your own pace, regardless of your current spiritual orientation. But we've been in this journey where we've realized that we can come to a place where I don't have to be who I thought I was. I can receive this new identity that God has for me if I want to receive Jesus. And that's where we are in this journey. And you can just see, I can see in the faces of people who are there starting to come alive with some of the joy that comes with that new identity. And we're going to talk with Gary a little bit about his story. Gary, tell us a little bit about just your background, who you are, why you wear Barney shirts, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. He zings me with something new every time just to put me off guard. I grew up in Maine on a little farm. My dad was a college professor and a minister, but my mom was the truly deep thinker. in the house. And so I remember talking about Immanuel Kant and Descartes at the dinner table as a little kid. So it was a pretty,
I think, therefore I is.
Je pense, donc je suis. Yeah. We learned it in the original. And, you know, I went off to college and
yeah, dude, you have issues. We all know right now that you have issues, so keep going.
And, you know, worked and here I am today.
Now, you mentioned, your dad, was a pastor.
Yep.
But yet you, up to a few years ago, you called yourself an agnostic.
I did. In fact, you know, that was just the really thing that differentiated me from being an atheist was that I was too polite. Because
I've never met a nice, happy atheist. I never really have.
I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to put it in your face, but I knew you were off your rocker.
Because you knew everything, because you know Descartes in his original language.
Exactly. You know, and a lot of other stuff that we don't have time to cover.
That's
up
right.
Here.
Well, that is part of your story. Part of Gary's identity is I just accidentally found out last service that he knew that in the original language, because your life, your identity has really been one of accomplishment.
Yep.
Learn things in the original language, national honor student, you know, start companies. You're a CEO right now of a big company here in town. I mean, you just, it's like, if you look at your life, everything you touch seems to have turned to gold, and yet that's part of your identity that you haven't, you've been fighting against.
Yep.
Like, we did this thing last week, these dog tags, which remind us who we are if we received a new identity. And mine, as I said, was accepted and affirmed Son of God, though I can't really see my Sharpie anymore, but this part of my identity.
I gave you one last service.
I know, I haven't rewritten it on there. What was yours? What's your identity there? What are you trying to remind yourself of?
I wrote two things on here. I wrote good enough, and I wrote not a mistake.
Why would you have to remind yourself that you're good enough and not a mistake? Obviously, you are good enough, and obviously, you don't make mistakes.
Yeah, obviously. You know, that may be obvious to you, but... But, you know, in the ID series, I don't know, I found it was sort of, I don't think my story is special. I think I'm sort of every man's story and every woman's story is, I found, I'm in two ID groups, by the way, so I'm an overachiever there too. but, you know, I found that we have this common bond that all of us had feelings of unworthiness, wherever it came from, every one of us. But that's been sort of my story.
But you know where yours came from.
I do. And my story has been trying to achieve to prove that I'm worthy. And the paradox of that is that every additional accolade I got, you know, I was 28 years old, standing on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, taking my company public. Grew a company from 2 people to 800 in 3 years. Sang high mass at Notre Dame. I mean, just, you know, great stuff I've gotten to do, and everything I did, I felt worse because there was this paradox that people would give me accolades, and I would say in my head, I'd be this message: "You don't deserve it. Don't you understand? Don't you people understand? I'm a fraud." And you know, you ask the question where that came from, and I don't know if everybody else who did the ID series felt this, but I kind of feel like my psyche is like sausage. You know, there's a bunch of stuff poured in the top. And it's grinding a lot, and you don't want to know what went in the top. A lot of it you don't want to know, kind of like sausage. And so this stuff, you know, things that you did that you don't want to talk about, and stuff comes out at the bottom, and that is who we are. And, you know, negative messages from religion, but the biggest one for me was, and this led to my being agnostic, was that I had a hard time envisioning God as a father because father put him in poor company, in my experience, which is to say that my dad wasn't, you know, wasn't dad of the year.
Because
he sexually abused me when I was a little kid. And it's hard for me to explain what it feels like to carry that around. The best example that, you know, that seemed appropriate, especially in a religious setting, was in biblical times, lepers were thought to be ritually unclean. In the Jewish faith, and by ritually unclean, you know, not just diseased or dirty, but sort of unworthy, because you needed to be cleansed to be worthy.
If
to
you
God.
Touch them, you sort of have their cooties. It makes you
You're not just getting the disease, but there's something unworthy before God about
right.
this. And lepers were required to shout out unclean, unclean as they walked through the streets. And that's what it feels like to carry this burden, because in our society, there's a taboo And by the way, the taboo is not incest, because I'm fully aware that one in four of everybody in this room has the same experience I had. And I am so deeply sorry for everybody who went through that.
You actually told me you spoke with 10 close friends, and your close friends are probably people, we tend to be with people who are like us.
Yep.
And so those 10 folks are probably pretty successful. And
yep.
Two of those 10 admitted to you right on the spot that they had the same thing happen to them.
Yep. Over time, you know, people came forward and told me.
Male friends, it's higher for women.
Yep. It is higher for women.
So you think this has contributed to your accomplishment, go, go, go?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear driver. You know, this feeling of shame that you carry, this burden that we all carry. And that's where mine comes from, and everybody has their own. You know, mine is, as I say, I don't have an exceptional story. It's everybody has their own reason for carrying this feeling of unworthiness, but I sense that a huge number of the people in this room share it.
Did you have this Oprah moment where you just all of a sudden remembered?
No,
and,
I didn't.
And how has this affected, or what's it like with your relationship with your dad right now?
You know, I didn't, and there's a silver lining to every dark cloud. I was really lucky. In a sense that I didn't forget it, and didn't repress the memory. So I've known it, never forgot it, and I've been working on processing it through therapy and prayer and interaction with friends and small groups for 20 years. The prayer priest just came in recently. I used to talk to God a lot, but it was more shouting at him, and there was a lot of four-letter words. And I didn't really listen to him much, and I wasn't very thankful. And you know, it's been only the last couple of years that my way of talking to God has changed, and I haven't been struck yet. So
yeah, a couple of years ago, you mentioned you sort of received the new identity.
I did.
Jesus became your life.
Yep.
We talked about last week, and now we're talking today about how do you walk in the new identity? How do you constantly renew it? So what is that looking like for you in relationship? Like for example, your dad.
Well, we are commanded to love. It's all throughout the New Testament. And as you read through the New Testament farther and farther, it gets reduced to simply God. It's just love, you know, one word. And I feel that in my bones. And when we think about love thy neighbor, and later the expert in the law says, well, who's my neighbor? And he says, well, it's the Samaritan, their enemy. I'm trying to picture who would my enemy be. I don't really have enemies, but, you know, the guy who molested me as a kid is probably pretty close. And love to me looks like forgiveness. And that's sort of step one. And so I feel sort of commanded, and it feels like the right thing, and it's for me. So
I focus. This is an ongoing process for you, too.
Yeah. We talked about this last week, and the phrase I used is, I do forgive my dad, as opposed to, I have forgiven my dad. And because it is an ongoing process. There are days when I can't stand the thought of him. But I can't imagine, I'm a dad with three beautiful little girls, and I can't conceive of a father, you know, walking into his son's room or daughter's room and doing that. And yet it happens. But I recognize I'm commanded to forgive, and it feels great to forgive.
Mm. Gary, I ended up speaking with his dad this last week. And it's an amazing thing, you know, you and your dad are able to talk about this. It's obviously everything is not perfect, but it's so clear that you have a power about you, an ability to deal with this stuff, because there's the power of Jesus that's operating in and through your life.
That's the only place it comes from. I mean, it's not me.
Stunning. Yeah. Stunning. And you're hoping, too, to be able to lend some of your leadership and learnings to other people here through one of the community groups. Just talk about that.
Yeah. I don't know if everybody got these, and Lori talked about it earlier, but just quickly, you know, how awesome is the stuff that goes on around here? Is it just unbelievable? Take time to read about this, because this is fantastic stuff, every one of these. And the one that I'm involved in is organizing what we're calling Understanding Childhood Sexual Trauma. And it is, no one's going to have to get up on stage or talk. It is, no one's going to be encouraged to share your story. It's really about learning and education about what are the effects in our society of childhood sexual trauma, and really about painting a picture that it is possible through work and prayer to receive healing and ultimately to move to a place of forgiveness. It is possible, and to break that taboo of talking about this. You know, we believe in America that what we don't discuss doesn't occur. And of course, that's not true.
Dude, you've done this three times. You got one more to go.
Rock on.
One more to go. Let's thank Gary for his encouragement, his courage. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
So this new identity, as we talked about last week, was the spiritual reality for those who receive Jesus, they receive all of his characteristics, all of his qualities. There is this wire transfer from his account to our account. Wire transfer of his holiness, wire transfer of his worthiness, wire transfer of his righteousness, of his holiness, of his goodness, of his purity. And so when God looks at us, he doesn't look at a person who was abused. He doesn't look at a person who has a lot of money. He doesn't look at a person who has no money. He doesn't look at a person who's single. He doesn't look at a person who's married. He looks at and he sees his son's identity living and residing inside of us. That is amazing. It's astounding. We need to keep reminding ourselves this over and over because that's where power resides. One of the metaphors in the scriptures that's used for this is one of a courtroom drama. There's actual legal terms in the New Testament about being justified. It's a legal term where God brings his gavel and he looks at us and says, boom, justified. I declare you justified, not guilty. Another metaphor it's used is one of a priest. You know, a priest is somebody who intercedes for people before God. That's the belief of the priest. And then when Jesus comes and does his thing, he is the ultimate priest, and you and I need nobody else to intercede for us. We don't need any other human interceding for us. Why? Because Jesus, who's our identity, intercedes for us. This is really cool when you think about this. In Hebrews chapter 7, verse 25, kind of teases this out when it says, therefore, he, speaking of Jesus, is able to save completely those who come to God through him because he always lives to intercede for them. You know what this means? This means right now, Jesus, if you have the new identity, he is interceding for you. Right now, he's talking with God about you. I don't know exactly how that works, that's one of the realities. If you ever seen Lifetime television, they always have these cheesy movies on there and all that stuff. And one of the kind of cheesy lines often happens is somebody's committed some crime and they want to represent themselves. And so they go represent themselves. They don't want an attorney. And anybody who's in the legal profession knows that no one ever wins who represents themselves. Makes for good television. It makes for a bad life. You need somebody else to speak for you who understands the system, who can present evidence, who's got a clarity about them. And so this verse and others speak to Jesus is constantly pleading our case, interceding for us, not because God is some angry, but that's because we are tied up in his identity. And he talks with us about that. You see, when you come to understand who Jesus is and you receive his identity, it doesn't make you think of yourself as a loser. Jesus doesn't make you think less of yourself. He makes you think of yourself less. He doesn't make you think less of yourself. He makes you think of yourself less. He doesn't make you, okay, all right, now I know God. Now I know Julia. Aren't I awful? Well, Gary showed me this old prayer book that he used to use in a church he grew up in. This old prayer book, one of the by rote prayers people used to say in this church was, oh Lord God, we're not worthy. We're so low. We're not worthy to eat the crumbs that fall from your table. I'm a groveler here. I'm so down here. I'm so low. When Jesus comes to your life, he doesn't make you think less of yourself. He just makes you think of yourself less. You realize, all right, I'm allowing God to work in and through me, and I'm just thinking more about what God wants for my life more than what I naturally want out of my life. Colossians 2. Book of Colossians, by the way, if you're looking for something to read this week, it just talks about this stuff in a lot of different ways. Great one for you to read through this week if you want to. Colossians 2, verse 20, just one of the verses I'll share from this book today, says this, since you died with Christ to the elemental spiritual forces of this world, why as though you still belong to the world do you submit to its rules? This is speaking to those people who have received this new identity. It says, since you died to the basic principles, why do you keep submitting to them? This is the New International Version. There's also a new version someday will come out. It's called the Brian International Version. Brian's International Version. The BIV, here's what the BIV says. It says this, since you received a new identity, why as though you still belong to your old identity, do you submit to its rules? This is what it's saying here. When you receive a new identity, you don't have to play by the rules of the old identity. The old identity tells you, I have to achieve in order to be accepted. No, don't play by those rules. Realize that God has already achieved for you. Don't be playing by the old rules. And we have to remind ourselves of this. And there's this constant stripping away of the old rules, the constant stripping away of the old identity and living in the freedom of the new identity. I had the old rules speaking to me at a moment this last week. Someone out there in publisher land, I think, dreamed up, okay, pastors of larger churches, we need to send them free books because hopefully they'll like them and they'll tell everybody to buy them and we'll make a lot of money from them. So I'm on some list. I get these like free pre-release books that come across my desk, which is kind of cool, actually. I kind of like that. I don't read all of them. But there's one came across my desk this last week that I really didn't like. You know why? Because I knew the author. I'm like, Now, why is that? I'll tell you why. Because part of my old identity, part of my basic psyche makeup is I am in competition with you. I'm in competition with you because I need to measure up. I need to gauge my worth based on how I'm doing relating to you. And I need to measure up. So what do I feel when somebody else comes with a book that I know? You're beating me. You're getting ahead. This is not... Or I start to feel this. I start to feel... And I'm a slacker. I'm not measuring them. I'm not doing jack. These dudes are out there writing. I'm not doing that. Well, what's my problem? I started thinking, and this lasts for about 15 seconds. And then I realized, okay, hold on. These are the old rules. They're trying to get a hold of me. This is the old rule. I don't submit to those rules anymore. Does that mean that someday I'm not going to write a book? No. It just means if I ever do, it's not going to be because I want to prove myself. It's because I want to allow God, who's working in me, to naturally play out through me. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to work sometimes an 80-hour week or something like that. It just means when I do, it's because what God wants to do in and through me, and not because I feel like I have to work 80 hours in order to prove that I'm worthy of my paycheck and I actually measure up. See, that's what the new identity does. It doesn't say I'm going to play by the old rules to prove myself. I'm just going to allow God to naturally use me and walk in freedom in the midst of the new identity that I have. See, when God goes... And talks about us and thinks about us, when Jesus intercedes for us, Jesus isn't pleading for mercy on our behalf. He's not pleading for mercy. In the book of Colossians, again, the first verse, it says this, "Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God." Since you've been raised with Christ. See, part of our identity is we already have this high exalted position before God. And so when Jesus, as the attorney, if he were to argue your case, guess what he doesn't ask for? He doesn't ask for mercy. Who asks for mercy? A lawyer asks for mercy who has no case. Lawyers ask for mercy when they have, you know, no evidence. Jesus intercedes on your behalf and he presents the evidence. You know what evidence he presents? Himself. Father, I just remind you, not that you need reminder. It's kind of like this cosmic dialogue going on at all times. Yeah, just because, not that you need reminder. But you know, here's all the evidence I would present you with, Bill. My righteousness. Here's all the evidence I would present for you for Sue. Who I am, my identity. There's this constant thing, this evidence, and the reality is that you have been raised. The reality is your old self is dead. The question is, if my old self is dead, my old identity is dead, why do I still have jealousy pangs for 15 seconds when I see a book? If our old self is dead and I know that my worth isn't in my beauty and my jewelry, why do I still spend an hour in front of the mirror trying to make myself look good? If I know that my old self is about the character inside, why do I still want to have 20-inch biceps on the outside so everyone will be impressed with me? If my old identity is all about I need to keep people away because I can't trust people and people will hurt me and I have this new identity, why is it still that I can't build relationships and trust people? Why is that? If I'm dead, the old identity is dead, why do I keep doing these things, thinking these things and feeling these things? Because you and I are like chickens. We're like roosters. What happens when you cut a rooster's head off or a chicken's head off? How many people have ever done that? How many sickos we have in here or farm people have ever actually cut? And I'm not asking if you've ever eaten a head. How many of you have ever actually... chop the head off, you know, or seen it. You know, what happens is you chop the head off, that thing is dead. But what happens? It goes running around and squawking because there's memory muscle. That thing has had muscle memory that's built into that thing. That even though it is clinically dead, it still keeps running around and squawking. That's what's like when your old self, your identity dies. We still have muscle memory that still functions, spiritual muscle memory that isn't the healthiest thing. Somebody in this last week who's big in the martial arts told me that the ancient samurais, they would have this specific pattern that they would walk through with their swords over and over. They would do this hundreds of times, thousands of times in the course of their training, in the course of their life, the daily thing, hundreds of thousands of times. So it was just kind of their natural thing. They would just go do this over and over. It was their training. So much so that when they were in close battle, as they were doing this deal, if they had their head cut off, samurais were known to actually still, without their head, kill people because they were still doing this as a result of the muscle memory. Now, I tried to verify this on Google. I couldn't verify it, but but I believe this person. See, this is what happens with you and I. We've been going through these motions for decades. And so just because we receive this new identity, it doesn't mean that we're still not going to act in some of the patterns that we've grown up doing in order to survive. And so renewing the new identity is a gradual and continual stripping away of the spiritual practices, of the physical practices, of the emotional practices that we've lived in order to survive. Verse 5 of Colossians 3 says, "Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs of your earthly nature. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs of your natural identity. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs of the things that you used to be about." And there's just a few examples that are a part of that. Verse 9, "Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge of its creator." That's verse 9. Take off the old identity, put on the new identity that is being renewed in the knowledge. The knowledge, why we're doing this series, we keep, "Oh, that's right, that is who I am. I am loved by God. Whatever those things are," I keep using examples, "my identity." But you all have your old identity that needs to be renewed. And we need to remember, "Oh, that's my muscle memory that's kind of going and kind of going out there." Now, how do you get renewed? Well, it's sort of like this stool. I've got this three-legged stool here. There's three legs to this stool, and I need all three of these legs. If one of them is gone, I'm going to tip over. And there's three things that you can do to constantly renew yourself, to constantly renew and remember the identity that you really have and feel this sense of refreshment. There's the Bible, there's community, and there's prayer. The first leg is the Bible. We need the Bible to define reality. We need the Bible to define reality. I need to look and I need to have reality defined, and it's counter to our old idea. It's counter-cultural. Here we talked about forgiveness. We need the Bible to define for me that if I want to get over my hurts, you know what I have to do? I have to forgive. And I don't get that from anybody who's wise, or if they are wise, they get that because this was Jesus' idea. This was God's idea. It's in the scriptures. And it defines reality. That no matter how many counseling sessions I go to, how much I like to kind of share my story, no matter what I do, if I don't forgive, release the people who have hurt me, if I don't release that bitterness and forgive, regardless of what they do, regardless of whether or not they ever call me up and say, "I'm so sorry what I did to you." Regardless, if I never get that, which I probably never will, I need to release. I need to forgive. Forgive as God has forgiven me. This is the way I get renewed. And the only way I get that is if I'm reading this, understanding this is reality. It's reality. Now, you'll find that as you read this, and I mentioned just Colossians this week, a book, good book for you to read in the New Testament. You'll find as you read this, you'll read a whole page and you'll just zone out and you'll forget what you read. You'll be thinking about the Reds and, 3-1. I hope they'll go 4-1. Did they go 4-1? Did they play last night? 5-1. Hello. God love that. 5-1. Castellini's on his game, huh? Man. So you'll find that you'll be reading this thing and all of a sudden you'll think about the Reds, you'll think about the person who ripped your heart out, or you'll be thinking about, you know, the television show you watched and something like that. And then don't feel guilty about it. Just go, "Oh man, I just zoned out." Go ahead and reread it over. Or you know what? Don't reread it over. Just keep going where you are. Just keep going where you are. Don't feel this religious guilt that I have to digest and understand everything that's there. I just realized as I read this thing, it's defining for me what reality is. I need that. Second leg of the stool is community. Because even though I read this and it defines reality, I need community. I need people around me who help me see reality. Now, I know people who know their Bibles very well, but they don't know jack about themselves. They can't apply it to themselves. You know, have you ever been around somebody like that? I mean, the most difficult people to work with are those who are deceived about themselves. Isn't that right? And so we need people to speak things to us, to speak truth to us, to say things to us that, that we wouldn't see on our own. I had this in my ID group this last week. someone, we were playing a modified version of the game, and somebody played the build challenge card to me, and they said, you know, Brian, I've known you for a while, and I think that you're still not over this old pain that happened to you, and I think that you basically modify your relationships and you keep people at an arm's distance because you don't want people, specifically people in the church, to hurt you again. Shut up! Shut up! What do you know? You know, it's kind of what you're thinking inside. So shut up! You know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, and then somebody else chimed in and pushed on it. And I realized, man, busted. That's true. I don't know that I ever noticed that before. I don't really notice that. And an example just occurs to me right now how that played out was I'm a prayer partner for somebody who's going over to Mama Lodi. And then I realized, oh, no. They're maybe know who I am. Maybe I shouldn't have signed up for that because they're going to know who I am and then they're going to get to maybe know me and then they're going to hurt me like other people have. I can't do that. And I realized, oh man, I'm that kind of thing. See, and people, we need people to look. I said, oh man, when you do this, it's not always bad information. You do this, you are phenomenal. Don't you see reality? You're a person that God is using and you have incredible characteristics. We need community to help us see reality. It's one of the ways that we are constantly renewed and refreshed in our identity. And then the third leg of the stool is prayer. I need prayer. We need prayer to sense reality. We need prayer to sense reality. Now sometimes, actually a lot of times when I pray, I don't sense a lot. I sense quiet. But you know what? I am interacting with the person I have a relationship with, and that is God. In fact, isn't it true that when you're interacting with somebody you have a relationship with, you don't always sense good things around them? You know, you're dating somebody and you're around them. I don't always say I'm with them, you know. Now, I'm sure if you're married, you sense great things every time you're around your spouse. Every single time, it's always good and it's always great. But, you know, the natural pattern relationships are you spend time with them, but you're not always sensing a lot of stuff. But every once in a while, there's this moment because you have patterns in the relationship where you just sense something. You go, oh, man, I'm so glad I'm around you right now. That's what prayer is like. I don't get up from times of prayer where all of a sudden incredible things happen because I've asked for them. Sometimes I get up and I don't feel all that much other than I was quiet and still and there was benefit in that. But sometimes when I'm spending time with God, I sense something I wouldn't have sensed otherwise. This happened to me this last week. I was in a meeting with our bank. Those are always fun meetings. Always fun meetings. And being with some muckety-mucks from the bank. And make a long story short, the bank would like to see a lot more money coming into here, and they'd like to see less money going out of here. And bankers just don't like call meetings because, we haven't seen you for a while. Let's talk. No, they like seeing our financials. They're like, we need to talk with you. And so I'm in there, and, you know, I kind of feel the same way many times and feel a level of pressure and stress about that. And there's a lot of smart people who are smarter than me around here that look at some of the finance stuff. But I'm sitting in that meeting and I'm going, ooh, man. Get out of that meeting and I just feel this weightiness. And so I go and I talk with God about this. And I've talked about this before, but I go to this place in prayer sometimes in my mind where I remember sitting under this tree where I used to get away from things when I was a kid. And I can take moments and I can still feel the rocks under my butt. I can still smell the pine needles over me. I can still see the dead branches on the lower limbs. They're still kind of going over. And I just get that loss in that moment. And then I picture and have this encounter with Jesus walking through the woods and sitting down right beside me. And because this Bible has defined reality for me, the Bible tells me that no matter how beautiful flowers are, they're not as beautiful as I am before God. And if God takes care of flowers, is he going to take care of me? If God takes care of birds of the air and sparrows, isn't he going to take care of me? And I know these things because the Bible defines reality for it. And I know that Jesus says, take my yoke upon you because my burden is easy. My burden is light. And so I'm aware of this reality, but I don't sense it all the time. And so in that moment, I can just kind of have this object. Maybe it's a banknote or something. And I said, God, Jesus, I just can't do this. And he goes, I got that. I got that. And so I just take that thing. I go, I got another thing. And I look at him and he goes, I got that. There we go. I got that. And I walked out with a sense of weightlessness. And you know what? Just talking about it, I feel the weight coming back. And so you know what I got to do? I got to go back and I got to renew myself and I got to do it again. It's an ongoing thing of stripping away. I want to invite the band to come up. And we're going to do something a little different today. We're going to sing a song that we sang earlier, all who are weak, all who are weary. And you know, the weak and the weary are not just those who are bankrupt and not just those who have certifiable addictions. The weak and the weary are those who have muscle and they've been going like this and like, I know that my inner beauty comes from it, but I can't stop performing to have people like me. I know that I'm forgiven, but I can't get over the bitterness and forget this person. I'm weak working these systems. I'm weary of the weak and the weary are those who seem to have everything going for them, but they can't get out of these patterns of behavior that keep them from really sensing a relationship with God. And I'm weak and weary from yielding my old identity. And so as an anthem, if that's what you want to say, we're going to ask you to stand. Let's all stand, actually. And we're going to sing this song, if you want to sing it. And then at the end of the song, we'll do something different. At the end of the song, we're going to leave. But if some of you, you've been sitting here and you've been uniquely touched, and maybe you want to sense reality and it will be helpful for someone to touch you and pray for you. We have people who are prayer team, who are part of our prayer team, who are going to be kind of in this room. And as everybody else is going out, if you'd like someone to pray for you, just kind of sit down and park yourself, and they'll come up to you and pray for you. And if you're just sitting down because you want to enjoy the music, just go like this. Okay, that's cool. We'll go to the next person. Okay, so God, as we sing this, some of us sing this, this is an anthem that we want to say that I'm tired of wielding my old identity and I want to be renewed. I'm weak and I'm weary, and whatever you want to do, I want to naturally do it through the power that you've given to me. God, I believe some of us need to go out of here and there's something that needs to happen to renew ourselves. There's someone we need to call. We're the one that has to go and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And it's going to be a renewing process. We need to call. We need to go there. Maybe that person's house is part of the renewal process. So we got to go out of here. There's something else that you put on us that we know we need to do as a part of manifesting the new identity, not earning our way, but manifesting the new identity. And so we're asking for strength as we put aside the old muscle memory from the old identity. And we thank you for your patience. Amen. All right, Thursday night, Holy Week experience. You want to come? It's going to be awesome. And if you want someone to pray for you, just sit right back down. The rest of you, we'll see you Thursday maybe.
I just asked him something like, God, what do you want from me? I'm tired of trying to figure it out on my own or make it happen myself.
So, welcome to The Blur. The Blur is Crossroads' weekly podcast, which is all about blurring the lines between what happens on the weekend at Crossroads and what happens in our daily lives as we're interacting with family, work, friends, whatever. And this week, we're going to talk about how this new ID that we've discovered in the midst of the ID journey plays out in our daily lives.
So there they were, all those things that really make me tick. All those things I tried to bury because I didn't think they were good enough.
So this week we wrapped up a 6-week journey in which we've been looking at identity and the concept of identity and how a lot of us have adapted our identity to fit the mold of what others have said to us or expected of us throughout the course of our lives. And these things may or may not be true of what God says about us. And so now we've kind of reached a point in the journey where a lot of us have uncovered unhealthy things we've been believing and maybe even, to some extent, replaced those with truth and found healing in the midst of this journey. But now is kind of where the rubber meets the road. What do we do with this newfound knowledge? Dave Eberhardt had some thoughts about how this ID journey plays into something he's been dealing with for many years now.
I'd like to tell you a little bit about my ID journey and how it started and where it's ended up. I think it really got going in the week leading up to Christmas in 2004. I got the worst cold or upper respiratory infection I've ever had. It was bad. Now, I didn't know it was a cold, and I'm basically a sissy. When I finally went to see a doctor, and I never do that, he basically gave me the take-two aspirin advice, and I had a lot of time to feel sorry for myself after that. So I decided to let God know how unhappy I was, and that's not a new thing. I do that fairly frequently. I'm pretty good at that. But what was different about this time is I just asked him something like, God, what do you want from me? I'm tired of trying to figure it out on my own or make it happen myself. So I give up on all of that. Now, what I'm about to tell you is one of those weird things you hear people in churches say sometimes, and it's this. See, God sometimes talks to me. It's not often, but it does happen. It's rarely reassuring, it's never wordy, and it's usually, you know, sort of a parental rebuke. Like, for instance, if I'm not taking care of myself, or if I'm doing something that's specifically stupid or harmful for me, he'll say, don't do that, that's not good for you. But I digress. This was one of those times he spoke, sort of, and it's always a sort of. Anyway, he said, are you done feeling sorry for yourself now? And I said, yeah. Yeah, I think I am. I'm tired of this. He said, are you ready to start dealing with these things? And see, now here's where I need to tell you about the jar. See, God has sort of been holding this proverbial mason jar full of fireflies in front of me for years. What you can't see is I'm holding my hand like I'm holding a mason jar. It's just, I talk with my hands. I can see the fireflies through the glass, but God has always wanted to open the lid and let them out. I always said, no, 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 I don't want to look in there. You see, each of those fireflies is an ingredient of who God created me to be, but I had sort of captured them and closed them up in the jar and put them away on a shelf in the basement where I wouldn't have to see them or deal with them. So, back around Christmas 2004, when God had me all self-pitied out, physically weak from this cold, at the end of my mental rope and kind of frustrated, he pulled that jar out and said, you ready to start dealing with these things now? And I said, yeah, okay. So there they were, all those things that really make me tick, all those things I tried to bury because I didn't think they were good enough. My artistic side, I'd pretty masterfully hidden away behind a facade of being, you know, more technically inclined, because that, you know, seemed like it was better. My sensitivity, I buried beneath the illusion of a hard exterior. My love and gift of teaching, I covered with ambition. There are more, but these are the ones that I feel like I can talk about with people who I've never met who might be listening right now. And so in just a few minutes, the futility of all my efforts from high school onward were revealed. Crap. That was my reaction. Crap. I knew I was going to have to start dealing with this. In the few months that led up to this whole thing, my friend Glenn and I had been having conversations where he would ask me who it was that I thought God had created me to be. And I really didn't have an answer for that. My answers tended to be a long list of the things that I could do. So I decided I needed to figure this out. So when I was feeling better and I started getting back into the swing of things, last, I guess it started in January, I probably spent the first 8 or 9 months of 2005 retreading the paths my life had taken, discovering how masterfully I'd been given lies and how eagerly I had adopted them. That pretty much sucked. Finally, I began to experience some freedom as I brought these lies into the light. And towards the end of the summer, I said, okay, that's enough progress for a while. This is a little too real, too fast. And I took a break. Life got extraordinarily busy for me then, too. My job role changed. The music career, the one that I had initially claimed for myself and then released to God, suddenly became fruitful. Crossroads built this huge honking building and moved into it. We started celebrating the holidays in it. I began studying and training for a certification I'd worked for a long time to get to. And this all happened at the same time. Well, all that stuff has just about run its course. And through it all, God has remained constant, holding that jar. You know, he shakes it periodically so I can hear those things rattling around inside. And he clears his throat from time to time meaningfully to let me know that we're not done yet. My break is almost over. I have more to learn about myself, more healing to do, more growth ahead of me, and probably some more uncomfortable stuff to bring into the light. I can't say I'm looking forward to it, but I do look forward to the other side of it. Someone once said the longest journey begins with a single step. I think I've taken a step in the right direction, away from the lies and one step deeper into the truth. It was a big step. A great big step. A great big leg-stretching, pants-ripping, toe-stubbing kind of big step. And I'm glad I took it. And so with stubbed toes and ripped pants and stretched legs, I'm Dave Eberhardt for The Blur.
Dave Eberhardt is a musician, a writer, and a regular Blur contributor. We'd love to hear your ID journey story. You can email it to us at mystory@crossroadscommunity.net. That's mystory@crossroadscommunity.net. Next week, we start a brand new journey, in which we'll be taking a look at what does it look like to have a childlike faith. We'll see you then.